Good morning, everybody. Today is Monday, March 14th, 2016. And this is Before the First Cup of Jewels here on UCY.TV. Happy Monday, everybody. Just like a Monday, my microphone had to be unplugged and replugged again. It is 48 degrees, pretty dark and dank here in upstate New York, but it sure does feel like spring. It was quite an enjoyable weekend. I actually double-timed it during the week last week so I could have a quiet day off. And of course, you know, I don't ever have a day off, but at least I wasn't sitting in front of the computer having to cut audio all day. I actually was able to move around and get the house clean and take a nap. It was awesome. So where do we leave off on Friday? We titled the show $1,000 Gene Sequence. AI teaching AI and Robo Brain Cloud. And I know my titles always sound like jokes, but they're really not. It's pretty disturbing. There were a couple MIT Technology Review articles about how there's this big project called Robo Brain, where they are putting information that they are spending a lot of time and effort in teaching artificial intelligence to learn. But they're saying that one of the big problems is that when a robot learns, it's not passing that information on to other robots. And robots learn very differently than us. They have to be given every step in the sequence of events that makes something happen from start to finish, you know, especially when they're a blank slate. And so what they had proposed is creating a very large repository of knowledge for robots to pull information from. And as they've been teaching these artificial intelligent, I don't even know what to call them. I never want to call them beings because they're not yet, but they will be. These creatures, these things, these objects, as they're teaching artificial intelligence, they started storing this data for other robots to utilize. So now they've gotten to the point in their experiments where they have robots in multiple locations so that when they can learn and upload, the others then download and learn, making for this hive mind swarm Borg learning concept that has always frightened me. And they are working on developing this stuff right now, and it sounds pretty successful. Some of the stories that we looked at, and there were a couple of them, they're already predicting within 3 to 5 years that this is going to be fully up and running. And remember, we have the law of exponential returns always when we're using computers to then improve upon what we've done and create new. And we have computers teaching computers, artificial intelligence teaching artificial intelligence. You know, we saw an experiment, again, it was at MIT, I'm pretty certain, where they were building robots that then built the next generation of robots. And they had shown the robots actually evolving because the mother robot was taking all of her good traits and building them into the new baby robots. This is frightening, people. This is the first step to there being a synthetic life form that can evolve and mutate with its external conditions. And I truly, for as much as they want to sell it to us that it's to take care of Nana, we have this aging population and little Johnny needs some discipline. He needs a robo nanny, you know, and Sammy needs a sex bot. You're never going to convince me that we're doing the correct thing. You know, they've been threatening now for a while, robots are going to take your jobs. And that's kind of where we're going to kick off today, because I came across some pretty interesting information over the weekend I wanted to share with you. I mean, guys, this honestly is a nightmare, a beyond dystopian nightmare that is unfolding, and it has been unfolding. You know, some of these stories that I find are from 2013 and 2014. If you can believe it, it is 2016. We're already in the third month of 2016, so a quarter through the brand new year. If you can believe it, a quarter of the way through 2016 already. They had been working on some of the stuff in the lab back already 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 10 years ago. If you dig, DARPA especially, and then sprinkling their money at all these universities and making all of our children participate with the dangling carrot of research dollars and the destruction of the future of humankind. You know, and that sounds like an exaggeration, but it's not. This is not an exaggeration at all. Our days are numbered. And if we don't prevent this from happening, and I don't know how we're going to do that. Remember, they're selling this as open arms. We were looking at virtual reality. And that really is how they're going to suck us into the machine. I think we may have read the story on Friday about the VR headsets being like a drug, and that's what they're hoping for. That dopamine fix is going to suck you into the machine. That love for the convenience, lazy, fat American. You're going to love to get your home robot to come do all your cooking and cleaning, you know, do all your taxes, get yourself some sort of AI app on your phone, tell you where to go and who you need to respond to. You know, they're selling this as the world of convenience, the George Jetson 21st century. Everything's going to be wonderful world of convenience where there are no jobs and we're just going to give you money to be able to survive. And you can spend all of your free time on intellectual and creative pursuits. It's going to be a happy world. All right. Thanks a lot, Mr. Robot. Americans see rise in robot workforce, but Americans say that their jobs are safe. Now here, this is what I've been saying. Like, talk about the dumb American stereotype, ding, ding. And, you know, I don't know if this is a global thing, but this absolutely is an American thing. People still think that the rise of the robots is ridiculous. We've seen it happen in factories since the 80s, increasingly, especially the automotive industry. Trust me, you know, my family worked in the automotive industry. I saw NAFTA happen. I saw the automation happen, and I saw the loss of jobs, and it has increased. You know, I mean, it's been over a long period of time now. We're talking 30, 35 years. It probably wasn't early 80s. I would say it was probably about mid-80s because that was... I graduated late 80s, and a lot of my friends had moved before then. You know, there was a big job loss up here. Bethlehem Steel closed, and the auto industry took a big hit, and it was all because of NAFTA and Mr. Billy. Is it Bill Clinton? No. Bill Clinton was later. Bill Clinton was the 90s. I don't remember who was president then. Who? Reagan? Reagan had nothing to do with NAFTA. Whatever. They were shipping jobs to Mexico. They were building factories just like they're doing now. TPP is going to make this a bigger sucking sound than you've ever seen before. But people still think it's a joke. They all think that this is just going to amazingly be fixed. Somebody's going to wave a magic wand and the robots are coming to the rescue. And that is not what is happening. Don't let them lull you into a false sense of security and tell you that there's going to be a nanny robot in every pot. And it's going to make it all better because it's not. 2/3 of Americans surveyed believe that within 50 years, robot and computer automation will take on much of the work now done by humans, according to a newly released poll. And at the same time, so that was 2/3 of Americans 2/3 of Americans believe that within 50 years, robots will take many of the jobs. But at the same time, 4/5 of Americans said that their jobs would remain human. Because, of course, 4/5 of all Americans are just so damn smart that a robot would never be able to do your job. Now, we just saw last week, and I think there had been another challenge maybe a month or so before. Google's AI, DeepMind, have been challenging the global champion of Go. Go is like chess on steroids, extremely difficult game. Try and look it up. I told you guys, I tried to doubt my daughter wanted to learn to play because she loves chess. And I said, all right, you know what? We'll find an app maybe on my cell phone and I'll see if I can figure out how to play it, and then I'll teach you how, or we'll look at it and figure it out. It's extremely complicated. That's all I can say. You got to like surround the piece, so there's no rules. Like with chess, you got, you know, certain chess pieces can move, you know, up, down, diagonal, zigzags, whatever. And this Go, you just have black and white pieces, and the pieces have to be on the cross, it almost appeared, between the squares, not actually in the squares, and you have to surround your opponent's piece. And I don't know, the rules were extremely complicated. I'm not even going to try and decode them here because I gave up at about that point. But all I can say is we had Google's DeepMind AI beat the world champion twice. But guess what? Story came out last night. Let's see if we can find it, because I had to laugh at the fanfare because it really does kind of put the writing on the wall for our future. Lee Sedol has beaten Google's AlphaGo. So AlphaGo, maybe that's what they're calling it, for the very first time. And they actually made it a really big deal. Turns out that Google's AlphaGo, so I guess that's what they're calling the robot that was challenging them on the Go game. It turns out that Google's AlphaGo isn't unstoppable. Yay! Yesterday, the AI had won 3 out of the 5 matches in its series against Lee Sedol. But today, the computer's human opponent has triumphed. Yay. Go, humans! Like, how frightening is that? So we're making a big deal out of the fact that the human won 2 out of 5 matches. Google won 3 out of 5 matches with its AI against the world champion humans. Not like this could be repeated often. Lee Sedol was upset after his loss to the system yesterday, apologizing for his failure to beat the machine. But today he was far more upbeat after his win, noting that, quote, I've never been congratulated so much just because I won one game. Yes, because this is much more than just playing a game of Go, Lee. This is about humans versus robots. According to AlphaGo's team, the machine made an error. Uh-oh, I thought they said machines don't make errors. It's only the puny humans. The machine made an error early in the game, but did not realize that it had done so until 10 moves later. The machine resigned after 5 hours, leaving Sedol the victor. And as the pair have played one another, it seems that they have been learning and understanding each other with each match. Now, that's the other thing. Remember, you have AI, but it's not just some sort of thinking, artificially intelligent machine that you're working about. You're working against. You are working with a machine that can take its interaction with you and learn something new from it, just like a child. And that is what a lot of this is about right now, is teaching these things how to act and interact and beat us, regardless of what it is. All right, so let's get back to this. Most Americans don't think robots are going to take our jobs. So Lee's got it out there for the humans twice now. Three times we've been beaten by the machine. But Lee, you're the last hope for humanity. Anyway, 2/3 of Americans surveyed believe that within 50 years, robot and computer automation will take on much of the work humans are doing now, according to a newly released poll. But at the same time, 4/5 of Americans said that their jobs will remain human. 65% of respondents to a Pew Research Center poll said that in the next 50 years, robots and computers will definitely or probably, and there's quotations around definitely and probably, do most of the work currently done by humans. 25% of people said probably not, and 70% said definitely not. So despite the fact that a clear majority believes that the rise of complex algorithms and robotic capabilities will wipe out much of human employment, 80% of the respondents were confident that their own current jobs would definitely or probably remain intact, with only 6 saying definitely not or probably not remaining intact. Respondents under the age of 50 and those with high household incomes and levels of education were skeptical of a robot takeover. Of course, the rich smarty pants said that there will be no robot takeover. Well, you would be incorrect, sir. 35% of 18 to 49-year-olds said the prospect was unlikely, while 27% of those age 50 and over agree. 37% of college degree holders said the prospect of bots stealing their job were unlikely. You people are wrong. Versus 28% of those who did not attend college. And those with an annual income higher than $75,000, 38% said it was unlikely, as opposed to 27% with those with an annual household income of $30,000. So what are they saying? If you have a lower education level or lower income, you're more likely to believe the robot's going to take your jobs? Is that because they are already automating the service industries? We heard on Friday about all the hotels, and now Hilton has, I don't remember the name of the robot, Caroline or something, that was going to be the concierge robot. We have those, the robotic hotel in Japan. They're going to be, I mean, we've already, for IVR, the interactive voice response, which has been around for a very long time, call in and get a menu tree with the robot voice. I mean, they have had artificially intelligent interactive voice response for quite a while now. I guess you could call it a pseudo AI, but I'm sure that they have something way more complicated now. I mean, I'm thinking back 10, 12, 15 years of when I was working with this stuff, but you could build in like, I wouldn't say intelligence, but there were algorithms. So based upon a question, because you would query, like if you did some sort of like support, automated support type line or something, you would tell them 1 for your phone, press 2 if it's your internet, press 3 if it's your computer or whatever. And then as you would drill down into each of those menu trees, it would continue asking you questions, and it was built into the software. The programmer would build it, so based upon the questions it asked you, then it could, you know, narrow it down to the topics and then access, let's say, a repository of information as solutions for maybe a troubleshooting line or whatever. Anyway, Americans working in government or not-for-profit were less likely to believe that computers or robots could do their jobs than those working for large corporations or medium and small-sized employers. And manual laborers were the most sure that their jobs will still be around in 50 years. And I would say, yeah, like skilled trades, maybe. But not even that. When you look at 3D printing and some of the stuff that they're doing now with construction, you know, manufacturing jobs, once you have these little nanofactories, I don't know if we ever did actually the DARPA A2A or P2P, it was called, atoms to atoms or something like that, where they literally are now looking to build what Eric Drexler talked about in that interview we listened to quite a number of months back, with the manufacturing at a nano scale to be able to create atoms as raw materials, molecules. Actually, we'd start with atoms. Atoms would be your raw materials, and you would make molecules that would then attach together and build actual product from the nano scale up. DARPA is soliciting proposals already for that. I think it was A2P or P2A. I don't know. We'll have to find it. I posted it back a few months ago, and I don't think we ever got to it. Pew Research, anyway, has found that most employees, especially manual laborers, consider other threats to their jobs more serious than that of robots, such as competitors working for lower pay or the overall contraction of the industry. And yeah, I mean, they've been challenged with low-paid workers, immigrants coming in and undercutting pricing for skilled trades, let's say, especially down south of Mexico, or Mexico and Texas, same difference. One of the things that friend of mine told me is that, you know, I mean, for stucco, let's say, and rock work, a lot of the times you have Mexican crews that are working on things. They have their own business. Their prices are typically cheaper, and they do it in a day or two. And it's high quality craftsman work. So how do you compete against that? Well, guys, I mean, if you were worried about low cost immigrants coming in and taking your jobs, I think you better back the truck up, because you don't even have somebody who can get hurt anymore when you got a robot. I mean, robots can still get hurt, but, you know, a lot less likely that a robot's going to get injured at a dangerous job. And you see Atlas get back up after he was knocked down. That thing's not going to stay down. I think there's a much bigger threat from robots and automation. I mean, even in the agriculture industry, they're talking about smart sensors and using drones, as well as automating farm equipment. What they do is they scan your field and they make a grid and they plant sensors everywhere. And then you have your robo tractors and your robo bees and your robo drones, and they just take care of it all for you. And you could get statistics real time on your smartphone, Mr. Farmer, as you're kicking your feet up watching Bessie the Hog dance around the backyard. Genetically modified Bessie the Hog, mind you, from China. Chinese clone factory. It's a very scary thought. Anyway, let's continue. The signs and predictions that the human workforce will be displaced by automation on a grand scale in the near future continue to stack up. Last month, this is a brand new story here from just a few days ago. Last month, the American Association for the Advancement of Science said that robots will replace half of the global workforce by 2045. And I mean, that is exactly the year that Kurzweil is rubbing his hands for. Jobs requiring moderate skill, unlike high-end doctors, for instance, or low-end food service workers, are most at risk, says Rice University computer science professor Moshe Vardy. And, you know, here's the thing. Even doctors, we got precision medicine going on in the Internet of Things, and we already have telemedicine. That's something that started rolling out in the beginning 2000s. And a lot of these hospitals are utilizing it for rural and third world countries, the rural communities as well. You know, I saw that insurance plans starting this year are now offering for $5. You don't even have to go to the doctor's office. You can get an online visit for $5 covered by your insurance. Get on with your camera and talk to your doctor. Stick out your tongue and say, ah, for the camera. You know, and that's going to continue. And as they are able to do this avatar-based stuff like they're doing already with the military and the super soldiers, where you can have an avatar robot that can be manipulated by you behind the scenes. Right now, it's probably with some sort of joystick or 3D, you know, Kinects type thing when you're standing in front of a detector that can detect your arm movements and it duplicates that in the robot itself. Eventually, it's going to be mind control, right? We talked about those little headset things that they're already using for keyboard and mice that can read your EEG of your brain and manipulate external items to your environment. Soon it'll be, I mean, they're doing it already with robotic arms. How long is it going to be before it's the whole robot? But, you know, think about it. Then you could have a robot surgeon. Let's say the surgeon's kicking it back in his office, sitting in front of his monitor with his little Google Glass or his Google contact lenses, watching the surgery and manipulating the scalpel just by thought, looking through the HD lenses in his internet-connected contacts. I see that happening very easily. That is not too far in the future. Anyway, a January report from Oxford Martin School said that the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development estimates that 57% of all jobs are now susceptible to automation. Meanwhile, in what it's called a conservative estimate, the World Economic Forum recently said that advances in technology combined with socioeconomic demographic changes could lead to a net loss of 5 million jobs in 15 major economies by 2020. Now, guys, that's 4 years from now. 5 million jobs in 15 major economies within the next 5 years. And as many as 7.1 million jobs could be lost through redundancy, automation, and disintermediation. And remember, we also have the TPP going on top of all of this. So this is just one facet. And it says, with the greatest losses in white-collar office and administrative roles. So you hear the middle class getting sucked out even more. That was the end of them. That makes us officially a third world nation when that all happens. The Future of Jobs report released last month by the World Economic Forum is the one that predicted those losses. The loss is predicted to be partially offset by the creation of 2.1 million jobs, mainly in computers, mathematics, or architecture and engineering. Yeah, I'll believe that. So 2.1 million more jobs of robots needing new creators? I don't think so. And I was telling you, you know, this was foreseen. This has all been planned. And now with the complete conglomeration of the federal government, the science industrial complex, the military industrial complex, and the tech companies, it's all been rubber stamped, and it is being allowed to happen, people. We've been seeing this now over the last year or two. Cybersecurity, oh my God, the hackers that allowed them to suck the tech companies fully into the federal machine. Now they're helping them to fight crime against you and me. Spy on everybody. Roll out the Internet of Things. Roll out the brain of things. That's what they were calling that at MIT. That big robot brain for AI to grow as a swarm mind in the cloud. Well, in 2014, there was an article that came out of Business Insider We've talked many times about Larry Page and Sergey Brin, the co-founders of Google. Well, there was an interview here. Google CEO, computers are going to take our jobs, and there is no way around that. So I guess they called that one. And remember, this is already 2 years ago. When Google co-founder Larry Page and Sergey Brin formed the company in 1998, yes, right when I was a tech, and remember I told you their tagline, Google is not evil. They sought to package all the information on the internet into an index that's simple to use. Today, Google is much more than a search engine company. Yes, it's the big bad who is in everybody's life and knows everything about everyone and everything. The company appears to be involved in every type of new technology, ranging from self-driving cars to contact lenses that can test for disease. And in a recent interview with Financial Times, CEO Larry Page provided some insight as to why the company has decided to take on so many different tasks. And with reading this in retrospect, you could start to see how things have played out. You could start to see with the original hand of cards, it's early, it's Monday, people, looked like before they were sitting there holding two or three of the aces, all right? Anyway, CEO Larry Page provided some insight as to why the company has decided to take on so many different tasks. And part of the reason is because Page believes that this inevitable shift is coming, in which computers will be much better suited to take on most jobs. Da, da, da. You can't wish away these things from happening, he says, and they are going to happen. He told the Financial Times on the subject of artificial intelligence infringing on the job market. You're going to have some very amazing capabilities in the economy. And when we have computers that can do more and more jobs, it's going to change the way we think about work. Yeah, sure is, like you don't got none. Sorry about that. He continues, there is no way around that, and you can't just wish it away, unquote. But people shouldn't fear computers taking over their occupations, according to Page, who says that it doesn't make sense, quote unquote, for people to work so much. Lull you back to sleep. Lull you back to sleep. Don't worry about it. Because it doesn't make sense you should be working so hard for your money. We'll just give it to you for free. The idea that everyone should slavishly work so they could do something inefficiently so they can keep their job just doesn't make any sense to me, he said. So that cannot be the right answer. Based on Page's quotes in the Financial Times, it sounds as if he feels like Google has an obligation to invest in forward-thinking technologies. We all have these billions that should be invested to make people's lives better, he said to the Financial Times. If we just do the same thing we did before and don't do something new, it does seem like a crime to me, he said. And so what did they do? They built Alphabet, the big monster company with all kinds of little tendrils getting into every single facet of our lives. Wouldn't the world be a happier place if 90% of the people with jobs put their feet up instead and left robots to do all the work? Why didn't the last house you bought only cost 5% of what you paid for it? And is there any reason why you or your children shouldn't one day enjoy limitless cheap power from nuclear fusion and a greatly extended lifespan? Well, Larry Page has something to say about that. At 41, the co-founder and chief executive of Google is freeing himself up to think big in a reorganization in recent days. And this must have been when they were like kicking off Alphabet. His shift of responsibility for much of his company's current business to a lieutenant and left him with room to indulge his more ambitious urges. Yeah, he actually moved over to Alphabet, I believe. Looking forward 100 years from now at the possibilities that are opening up, Page says, we could possibly solve a lot of the issues we have as humans. It is a decade on from the first flush of idealism that accompanied the stock market listing, and all of Google's talk of quote unquote, don't be evil. Remember I told you that? That was their tagline. And making the world a better place, which was another one, has come to sound somewhat quaint. Its power and wealth have stirred resentment and brought a backlash in Europe in particular, where Google is under investigation for how it wields its monopoly in its internet search. Page, however, is not shrinking an inch from the altruistic principles or his outsized ambitions that he and co-founder Sergey Brin laid down in seemingly innocent times. Right. That was before they knew everything and anything about you and had millions of people's DNA profiles in a database with Sergey Brin's wife at 23andMe. Pretty frightening, the amount of information that they have on us right now. I would say that the backlash needs to commence. And even Google's famously far-reaching mission statement, quote, to organize the world's information and make it universally accessible and useful, unquote, is not big enough for what he has now in mind. Yeah, no, Google's new vision is absolute, utter human world biological domination. The aim to use the money that is spouting from its search advertising business to take out positions in the boom industries of the future, from biotech to robotics. He says we are in a bit of uncharted territory, trying to figure it all out and how do all these resources get used and have a more positive impact on the world. Well, Mr. Roboto, just take it all over. Page, you know, it's pretty crazy. Page estimates that there are only about 50 investors that are chasing real breakthrough technologies. Yeah, we talked about this. They're called disruptive technologies. Technologies that take the world and turn it upside down on its head. And there have been many in the past, and we are about to undergo another one of those massive revolutions in history where everything that we know is going to be dumped on its head within the next few years. The question as to whether a private company rather than governments should be throwing its weight behind some of the world's most long-range and ambitious science project, he reports. Well, somebody's got to do it. And pretty much that's what's happened. The tech giants have now all pulled together. They're all working on this Internet of Things, the Brain Project, the Longevity Project, curing aging as a disease. And they're all rubbing their hands together because precision medicine and being able to slice, dice, track, bag, and tag to the cellular level is huge money. And then give it all to the federal governments around the world to be able to track everybody. All in the name of your safety and living longer in 21st century. Let's all be green and live in our white, happy, sterile environment in this Agenda 21 cities and eat your bug protein with your 3D printed replicator food that's all free, because you know what? There are no more jobs. But you know what? We have a solution, so don't you worry about it. It is called basic universal income. And I told you, we've been seeing a lot of this lately out of the 2045 Project news groups that I subscribe to. They think that this is going to be the answer to the robots taking all of our jobs. Let's just give everyone a guaranteed income and they can use it to buy necessities and sit around and use their brain thinking about all the wonderful creative things that they haven't had time to do before. I saw Canada is already getting ready to roll out a real-time, real-life example of that. The other day, a story came out, oh, I don't know, maybe it was Saturday, Sunday, something like that. I would have to find it. But then MIT Technology Review rolled something out on the 11th, which was 2 days ago, 3 days ago. And I think they actually mentioned the Ontario Universal Basic Income, and it is called The Dangers of Universal Basic Income. I mean, we've talked about many times before, you know, what would happen if the world ended up being a welfare state? The welfare state is used to control you. And when you are no longer earning, here's the big problem. You become a useless eater. You know, for anyone to think that it's a good idea to be sitting around doing nothing, getting lazy, and losing all your abilities and your skills with your hand out for the feds to hand you a check every month so you are beholden to them. For anyone who thinks that that is a good idea, you need to have your head checked. I mean, of course, who wouldn't want life to be easier and have as much money as you possibly could need without having to work hard for it? But on the other hand, who's giving you that money? And you always have to pay the piper at some point. All right. So here are these two stories. Canadian province is about to start trialing universal basic income. People living in Ontario, ding, ding, my lovely neighbors right to the north, could soon start receiving an unconditional allowance each month, with the government this week announcing that it will begin trialing a pilot version of universal basic income in 2016. The idea is that by giving everyone a set amount of money regularly, regardless of whether or not they need it, the government will increase the general standard of living while greatly reducing the financial burden on those who fall through the cracks of the welfare system, such as stay-at-home moms who receive no compensation or those who do not qualify for payments. So how nice is that? Good old Ontario. Justin Bieber, no, what's his name? Justin Trudeau. Who knows Justin Bieber? Good old Justin Trudeau is doing it with that lovely smile and a twinkle in his eye. I'm just going to give you all money and things are going to be all wonderful. La, 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 la. Yeah. Look out, Ontario. You've just been marked as one of the experiments, with quotation marks. All right, MIT Technology Review also writes about the universal basic income, but beware of the dangers. This is the latest big idea among the tech elites as those in Silicon Valley struggle to cope with the growing public unease over the effects of digital technologies taking on jobs and income inequality. Dressed up as universal basic income, the idea is to give everyone, in some versions, every adult, a fixed sum every month. It's not a lot of money, but, so the argument goes, it would help people survive as jobs are increasingly lost to robots, software, and automation. If there are no jobs, it would at least give people something else to do, suggests New York Times' Fareed Manju. We will all be free. And this is what I said. I mean, this is Kurzweil to the T. We will all be free to become artists, scholars, and entrepreneurs, or otherwise engage in our passions, says Fareed. A government, you know, it's all about being intellectual with your paintbrush, painting pretty colors, and maybe your intellectual pursuits will come up with a cure for, I don't know, fixing the human condition. We can discuss philosophy and eat grapes or be fed grapes by our home robot. If there are no jobs, he says, of course this will give people something to do. Government-supplied guaranteed basic income is not a new idea. An earlier incarnation called the negative income tax was pitched by conservative economist Milton Friedman in the early 60s as a way to curtail the growing government anti-poverty programs of that era. And you know what's interesting, too, is that I was listening to Jay Dyer ran last night here on UCY, Jay Dyer's assessment of Brave New World last night, and there were a few things that caught me about that novel. But Jay actually mentioned Milton Friedman and his pitch for the negative income tax back in the 1960s. And remember, this is a way to fully control people. And now as we go to digitized income, which is happening more and more, right? Get away from the physical dollars that can't be easily tracked, bagged, and tagged. Give them digital dollars. So now you have your qubits that they can control. They can turn on and turn off. They can make it go poof when they want to shut you up. Hey, guess what? You know all that universal income we gave you, all that money to do all those wonderfully creative pursuits that we told you you could do? Well, you know what? You opened your mouth too much. You were being a little too creative and thinking a little too much. So we just turned your account off. You now have zero. And oh, yeah, your Internet of Things front door to your house. You know what? We changed the passcode to your iris scan no longer opens the door. We have a new home for you. It's downtown. It's really color coordinated, all white, so you don't have to worry about it. Everything goes with white. Warm, comfortable, we'll be feeding you. Don't worry about it. Just come here, your Google self-driving car with an Atlas inside. We'll be there in about 20 minutes to come pick you up, Ralphie. I don't know. I mean, guys, I just, when I read this stuff, I start to have these visions, and none of them look good. This is another one of those dangling carrots they want you to just chomp right up. Look at how easy it is. You know, one thing my economics teacher in junior high school taught us, Mr. Feinauer was his name, and he was the one who used to, former military, used to walk around with a metal yardstick in that room. It was afternoon, and I hated social studies. Man, I hated history. It's just bleh. And he used to tell Vietnam stories all the time, so it was really rough. And it would get hot in that room, especially this time of year when they weren't sure if it was spring or winter still. And the heat would kick on and you already ate and you'd be like, oh, God. And your eyes would kind of be rolling. And he'd walk over to the heating unit with that metal yardstick. And if he saw everyone dozing off, he would go, bam, and wake us all up. I mean, like literally people would fly out of their chairs when he'd smash that yardstick into the heater. But the one thing that he taught us, actually there were two. One was the longest word in English language, which I think there's a longer one now. But at that time, back in the early 80s, it was anti-disestablishmentarianism. I remember that. It was pretty funny. We had to learn how to spell that one. And the other thing that he taught us, I must have been maybe 14, 15, was that there is no free lunch ever. And if there is a free lunch, then there are all kinds of addendums attached to that you better be reading with a highlighter and paying attention. There is no free lunch. So if they're planning on handing out universal money to everybody, like just print them up some more, they're going to just give it all away to you and you don't have to do anything except look pretty and think about creative pursuits. There's something afoot, Chuck, I'm telling you. All right, back to the story. In 1972, during the presidential campaign, both Richard Nixon and his liberal Democratic challenger, George McGovern, supported some version of the idea. And yeah, 1972 was a bad time. I remember we had the oil embargo going on, and the auto industry was upside down and sideways. Everybody got laid off back in the early 70s, early to mid 70s, I would say. My dad was off work for a couple of years, and we didn't have much of anything. Actually, you made do with what you had, is how it went. And in recent times, the basic income has regained popularity among some policymakers. This week, it was reported, and we just read some of that, that Ontario is considering a pilot project to begin next year, and there are calls for the UK to follow suit as well. These initiatives, yeah, they can give them to all of the displaced migrants all over Europe. that now have no home, no income, no food, and are living in detention centers. I mean, this is just horrifying what is going on right now. These initiatives may or may not make sense as an anti-poverty strategy to provide people with an economic safety net. And that may be particularly important as digital technologies and automation continue to displace many workers from well-paying jobs. I mean, you guys realize, like, this disruption, we've been waiting for the economic collapse to happen. And everyone's like, oh, here it comes. Oh, here it comes. False start. Here it comes again. Oh, no, not this time. Yeah, next time is coming. I mean, there have been so many of them the last 4 or 5 years. But it's happening in slow motion. It's like a game of Jenga. Jenga. Remember that game? I thought that game was fun. You had to be pretty strategic as to which little piece of wood you pulled out down below without tipping the apple cart just yet. But there are a lot of pieces that they've pulled out of the bottom of the supports. And they're just getting ready. They don't even got to kick the last supports left. They just got to blow on them. And that's about all it's going to take. And they're just lining us up. They're like, don't worry about it. We're going to just give you money, give you housing, give you cars. Because it's all going to be free, land of plenty. We'll give you food. We took care of it all. Don't worry about it. But it's interesting that this is the tech elites. Again, the tech elites, the same tech elites that are going to discover how to make you live forever. Same tech elites that are going to save us from the hackers, save us from all disease. All this philanthropy, making sure everyone's got a roof over their head, a chicken in their pot. Among the tech elites and their boosters, the idea of a basic income seems to have morphed into an anti-poverty strategy into a radical new way of seeing work and leisure. And in this view, the economy is becoming increasingly dominated by machines and software. And that leaves many without jobs, and notably society with no need for their labor any longer. So why not simply pay these people for just sitting around? Somehow, in the thinking of many in Silicon Valley, this has become a good thing. Right, because you know what? Now you can become the guinea pigs to start testing our longevity medicine on nanobots in the blood. Remember, that's part of Google's whole longevity project. We just heard Kurzweil talking about that on Friday. It's all going to be about nanobots in your blood being the sentry for disease and fixing things before they ever get broken. Nanobots in your brain, he said, to connect you 24/7 to the internet. So we could be part of this hive mind that they're working on developing right now. It'll be global intellectual pursuits while laying in a comfy chair while your nanny robot at home feeds you grapes. It's frightening. It's not real. It's not going to happen. Okay? You and I will be useless eaters. It'll be the land and the world of plenty. We will be eating bug protein and 3D printed Mickey Mouse shapes that'll be built into your little prison that you're going to live in. 21st century, Agenda 21, little shoebox downtown with push button Google cars to take you wherever you want to go. So anyway, somehow the thinking of many in Silicon Valley, universal income has somehow become a good thing. Eduardo Porter, also writing in the New York Times, does an excellent job of debunking this utopian scenario. We might look at that tomorrow. Still, there is something deeply troubling. This is interesting. It's MIT Technology Review writing this. There is something deeply troubling about the way many in Silicon Valley are embracing this vision, writing off a large number of people as not relevant to our tech-centric economy would be an enormous waste. And what is more is the income gap between the tech elites and others is already far too large. And it's hard to know how a basic income would even help. Far better for Silicon Valley leaders to use their talents and creativity to deploy more immediate and effective methods of closing the economic gap that they have helped create. Dun, dun, dun. So what do you think about them apples? Yeah, I think tomorrow we will hit the New York Times story on this. And one more really quick here in the last minute. Ars Technica came out with a story yesterday. Welcome to the Cyborg Fair. And I hear loony circus music. A generation from now, people will wonder how we even survived without such technology. Michael Barev Rudy never expected to have his fingers implanted with a magnet. But in November, remember this is this body hacking that they've been doing. But in November 2015, the 18-year-old decided to embed a 3mm by 1mm magnet in his index finger at an event held in Dusseldorf, Germany. The crowd gathered to watch as the man in the smart gray suit and green surgical mask carefully sliced open the sandy-haired 18-year-old's finger. And after he cuts with the scalpel on the one side of my finger, yes, he cut my finger open, says Michael, looking decidedly pale as he smiles nervously before the flashing camera. And after he sterilized the table and numbed Michael's finger, he says, I don't really know how to describe the look. They put in a magnet. And because the magnet refused to slip easily into the young man's finger, they had to try 6 times before they succeeded. And they are now working on making people cyborgs, where he could buy a beer with a literal wave of his hand. We actually talked about that, where there were some employees as well at a company where they were putting in their magic powers, like Regina Duggan called it. You're going to have superpowers. You can either swallow your pill or put it in your arm. All right, guys, if you can even believe it, that is a Monday in the bag. Make sure you stick around. Lonnie Clark is live up next. And Monday Night Radio is always awesome. Tim Kelly at 6. Corporate Report at 7.